I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Thanks for listening and being part of my podcast. I hope 2024 is kind to you. In my 27 years as a Victorian policewoman, I investigated everything from a stolen bicycle to a stolen life. Policing taught me a lot about human nature, which I explore in my podcasts with a mixture of interesting and thought-provoking guests discussing the human side and impact of crime on all those involved, including the investigators. And I'd love for you to give me a review if you can. They're just a great help to me. I give my guests the opportunity to tell their story in their own words and how they remember an incident. It may not be how others remember it, which I ask you to please keep in mind. My podcasts are not suitable for children and some adults for that matter. If you find yourself affected by my subject matter, contact Lifeline or any other support service or person you feel comfortable with. Thank you.
I was certain that my ex was coming to kill me, that he was coming to kill my children. There was no doubt in my mind. The first time that I saw him at court, I got sick. I started vomiting. I had to be taken away by an ambulance. I was certain that we were dead.
Hello, everyone. Hope you've had a good week. And this week we have part two of my interview with Tammy Castleson, pretty amazing woman. Just before we start, I've got a warning. Today we talk about suicide, a fair bit about it, so please consider if today's podcast is right for you. So just to recap, Tammy Castleson had it all, or so it appeared. A carefree, happy childhood, happy upbringing, meets Mr. Handsome, Mr. Popular, Mr. Nice Guy, Mr. Life of the Party. You know the type of guy I'm talking about. But he also had a carefree, happy childhood and a happy upbringing, a happy life, right? Tammy and her husband had two adorable children and everything just seemed perfect. But behind closed doors, Tammy didn't have it all. She was frightened. Her husband's behaviour was becoming more unpredictable. His bursts of anger, his yelling, his insults and his threats. And it wasn't only towards her, but her children as well. Mr. Handsome had become Mr. Narcissist, Mr. Abusive, Mr. Vindictive, Mr. Controlling, Mr. Demeaning. Like so many other survivors of domestic and family violence, Tammy made excuses for his behaviour, not recognising or understanding the seriousness of his increasingly violent behaviour. And it wasn't until an ill-fated attempt at taking his own life and ending up in hospital that Tammy found the courage to leave. That's when she realised his abuse had included financial abuse and discovered their finances were in shatters, non-existent. He'd kept it secret from her that they had nothing, and Tammy and her children were homeless, but homelessness was a safer option than staying. How does a successful, educated, professional woman with a background in counselling, psychology and teaching become homeless? Tammy was dragged through the court system where all the games her husband could have played, he did, along with his legal representatives, who she felt belittled and intimidated by. Tammy's husband eventually did end his life, but he left a lot of heartache and a lot of what-ifs. What if they could have tried some type of amicable reconciliation? What if their children and their father could have mended some of the damaged relationship? What if he'd sought some help? His death became a senseless void, unable to be filled, all because he refused to seek help. So this week, Tammy talks of how toxic relationships between parents affects those innocent parties, the kids of that marriage. She tells us of the shock of being the subject of what she describes as a vexatious counter-AVO by her husband and being arrested, handcuffed and placed in an interview room to be questioned about a supposed breach. She also takes us into the world of a justice system, which sadly she describes as broken, and how the whole system is abusive. She shares how the system treated her, a supposed victim. She describes as unacceptable the fact that whilst in the witness box, she was intimidated, humiliated, yelled at, and called a liar, and how the judge allowed her to be treated this way when she did expect that the judge would interject, but he didn't. She also talks about the urgent need for police to better understand coercive control within a relationship and just how just a look can put such fear in a victim and not a word is said. I was pretty shocked to hear that a policeman actually said to her, quote, "It can't be family violence because you aren't in a relationship anymore," unquote. Really? God. Tammy talks of her husband ending his life and the devastation that brought, along with the sadness and grief for what could have been and what they'd had and lost. Tammy tells us about writing her book, The Grimmest of Fairy Tales, and how that helped her in her grief. So, hard to say enjoy this week, but I hope you get something out of it. And if you are listening and in the same position as Tammy, just know that you're not alone. Take care. You talked before about the children. Can you share with us how, like, this sort of a relationship, this toxic relationship that you're in must have affected the kids? Can you tell us about how it affected them at the time, but more so now that they're older and they've been able to talk to you about it?
Look, I've mostly protected my children. They are incredible children. They are incredibly resilient. They are headstrong. They are kids who know what they want. They're both incredibly successful in terms of building relationships and also in terms of, you know, being, they're academic and they're sporty and they're just kind and loving. And children only need one healthy parent is the good news. And so I always protected them from him as much as I could. And obviously he had some impact on them. They could see that he wasn't right. When everything did happen, we went to see him and he was just incredibly toxic to be around. He blamed them for what had happened. He told them it was their fault. Started telling them details of what had happened and how he had planned it. And it was very difficult to be around him, and they made the decision that they did not want to see him anymore, which made people very angry. People did not understand. And they were very.
How old were they at this point?
My daughter was 13 and my son was 17. He was in the middle of VCE. And I just continued to protect them. And he started really taking out his anger on them. He started he started stalking them the same as he had been stalking me. And there was a lot of technological abuse, just sending them, you know, emails and text messages and all the rest. Eventually, I had to take out an AVO protecting myself and the kids. There were just too many threats, and I was just really concerned for them. Right from the day that he attempted suicide, all three of us started seeing a psychologist, and she was a huge support. She's just been amazing. They could call her anytime, they saw her anytime. And they also had an incredible school community, beautiful teachers, beautiful friends who could support them through everything. And they've been amazing. So unfortunately, they weren't able to keep a relationship with their father. I've always said that I wanted them to have a father. Of course I wanted them to have a father, but not someone who was toxic. And if he got help, that they could have a relationship with them. And they are such strong kids. I mean, they are the most independent, strong children. From very young, they've been strong and independent. And when they were ready to, my son kept reaching out. When he was ready to get help, hopefully they would be able to have a relationship with him. But it just didn't come. And there was just so much grief losing him, because that chance for hope was just gone. But my children are amazing. They are living their best lives. And, of course, there's a huge hole in their hearts, the same as there is in mine.
I was just going to say, there would be a huge hole in all your hearts.
Huge.
What could have been. I just can't imagine knowing that you'd hit rock bottom and you're homeless with two children. I'm assuming that there was, I don't know, humiliation, embarrassment, shame. Can you take us through how you managed to tell, say, the school, your family, and what their reaction was?
Look, the night I found him, I just knew that I had to stay calm and just do what had to be done. I'm a very emotional person. I live with my heart on my sleeve. And I just did what had to be done. I didn't phone any of my friends or anyone who I would, you know, start crying with. And I did. I stayed focused. I stayed on task. I think I called the only people I called was his best friend and my dad, just so that they knew what was going on.
Is this when he succeeded, I suppose, in taking?
No. So this is when he attempted to. And from that day, okay. I had to just be like, in the mode of doing and just getting things done. And I had to, the next day I phoned the school, I went in, I saw them, just matter of fact, told them what was going on. I said, I have to keep my children in the school. I'll do whatever it takes. I'll pay for as long as I have to. I just want these children to be healthy. And the school loved my children. They were already on part scholarships there. My daughter became a head girl there. Like I say, I've got beautiful children, and the school was incredible to my kids and just supported them and held them. While we had some people who turned away, most people were amazing. I was also devastated because there were a lot of people who hadn't told me that he had been borrowing money from them. You know, one of the most important things is that people need to trust you more. You don't know what's going on behind closed doors. So he was borrowing money from people, you know, and they all thought
how humiliating. This charming.
All these people coming out of the woodwork telling me that he's borrowed money. One friend came out of the woodwork telling me that he had borrowed money from my husband had borrowed money from him, and he had lent him the money, and he would only have lent him the money because it was for me, and he wants me to pay him back the money. And it was just this shock. So I had survived. I sucked it up. I borrowed cars from anyone. I took charity. We had, You know, we had these amazing people, sometimes strangers, who let us stay at them. And I just had to, it was a lesson in grace. You know, I found it really hard to accept help. And sometimes you just have to. I couldn't believe that this person who was my life, who had been my life most of my life, had stolen and lied and cheated. And I had to stop caring what people thought, because I was fighting for my life and for my children's lives. And one of my greatest things is integrity and justice. And I just had to suck it up.
We were talking about your embarrassment and shame with the school, and the fact that you just have to put all that aside, wouldn't you? Because it's about your kids and about keeping them on a level where they're trying to just manage the best that they can.
Absolutely. And, you know, you try and keep it as quiet as possible just in your circle. I remember someone came up to me at school and asked me a question, and I said, "Does everybody know?" And obviously everybody knows, but you just want as few people to know as possible. And it's just the way it is. And you just have to not care what people think, because you just want the best for your children. And that's all.
And I imagine that would be very hard for you, because you do, as you said before, you wear your heart on your sleeve. You do care about other people. So to actually try and have to put that aside, that you've had all your life, to put all that aside and just try not to care about what people think, that would be so hard to do.
It was. It was, and it is. I have to say, it's one of the hardest things, is to stop caring what other people think. You know, I told one friend, and I didn't tell a lot of people because I did want him to be supported, but I did tell one friend that I had gotten an intervention order, and that's why I was protecting the children, that he really had become very toxic. And she said, well, she doesn't trust the court system and she doesn't care. And I was just devastated. I had done nothing to, you know, not be supportive of my kids. And he had been the abusive person. And I couldn't believe that this is someone who's known me forever and was supporting him. And so, you know, one of the most important things is to stand and listen to victims.
Yeah, I'm just thinking to myself, it's really a good lesson for people too, I imagine, that your kids, even though they have been through, something I just can't imagine, but it also shows that kids can be resilient, or they are resilient, because your kids have gone on to have very successful academic lives, and it doesn't matter whether it's academic or not, but the fact is that it just shows that you can get through these things, you know, and your kids, may use it as a stepping stone to think, I am never going to experience, that they learn from what they have seen, and they think, you know what, I will never, ever stand for somebody trying to control me. So I think they learn resilience, don't they?
And that's one of the things I really want people to take away from my story, is that there is hope. Both myself and the kids are strong, and we talk about post-traumatic stress, and I've definitely had post-traumatic stress and terrible symptoms. But we also have post-traumatic growth, and that is that we grow from things that really hurt us. And we, all three of us, are incredibly strong. We've got incredibly good lives, and as terrible as things have been, we're not going to be broken.
It's not the first time I've heard about post-traumatic growth, I'm pretty sure you'd be aware that I was diagnosed with PTSD years ago now.
Yeah.
But I did grow as well in different ways from being diagnosed with a mental illness. So it's not the end of the world. I say this often, it's not the end of the world. It's just the start of another world.
Yeah.
And, you learn to deal with the symptoms and to handle them and manage them. It's, you know, we're not saying it's easy, but you just, all these opportunities can come into your life that you never expected, and it's a lot of it is to do with growth and learning about ourselves. Tammy, you've talked a little bit there about the court system. I'm loath to bring it up, but can you tell us about your experience with the justice system? Oh my goodness! I don't know where to start.
To be honest, no. it's just devastating and traumatizing, and you know, what can I tell you? It's so broken. I thought that the court system was about justice, and I can't tell you how many people say to you, "There is no justice," and I just don't understand it. I don't understand it, and I don't understand why it's not getting fixed. And people are saying that they are going to fix it and they are fixing it, but it's just not happening fast enough. I just heard a story the other day again that made me cry. There's just too many people who are doing the wrong thing. The lawyers are horrific. So narcissists will hire narcissistic lawyers, and what you go through as a victim is just too sad. Sitting in a safe room with other women who are just sobbing, and it's not just women, of course men get affected by it too, but they're just so many women, and just sitting there when they're sobbing, knowing that they're going to have to hand over their children to men who have harmed them, is just awful. The ease with which my ex was able to get an AVO against me on absolute nonsense. Like, I read what he had written for the AVO, the interim AVO, and then I got the transcript, and the judge didn't even ask him questions. He said, "Is this true?" And the judge said, and he said, "Yes." And the judge said, "Okay." And he signed it. And then it was just, it's pathetic, absolutely pathetic. The judge it was completely a vexatious counter ABO. And then he claimed that I breached it. And so the police, and called the police so many times insisting that they arrested me. It is just, it's horrific. And what people go through, I went through nothing compared to what a lot of other people go through.
Well, I wouldn't say that, Tammy. I think everyone's story is relevant, isn't it? And it doesn't matter how difficult it is with others. Your own experience is just horrendous. And to be honest, I don't know how people get out of bed every morning with, you know, what you've been through. But Tammy, can we go back when you said you don't know where to start? Can we start at the beginning when you first went to the police about the behaviour of your husband?
Yeah.
What was the – and again, I don't want to dig the heels in with the police, because they're only as good as what they're teaching them at the academy, really.
Yeah.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And they obviously need a lot more training, but I hear it too often to be able to ignore it.
Yeah.
The response that people get, particularly women get, when they go to the police. Tell us about your experience.
Look, I'm hoping that things are getting better. I spoke to Lauren Calloway and you know, the head of the police, a Victorian police, and she says that we've got this amazing new training centre, that things are getting better with the training. But then you hear of these terrible stories still. So it's hard to know, and I just hope that things go from strength to strength. I was faced with police who said ridiculous things to me, you know, not understanding the severity. And also, you know, if they don't understand coercive control and they don't understand the context, it's very difficult for them to understand the threats as they're written. You know, as a perpetrator just has to give you a little look. They just have to write one word. And you know what they mean. And you know the severity of that threat. I was certain that my ex was coming to kill me, that he was coming to kill my children. There was no doubt in my mind. The first time that I saw him at court, I got sick. I started vomiting. I had to be taken away by an ambulance. I was certain that we were dead. And these police, there were a couple of policemen who were incredible, who were very intent on trying to help me, but they couldn't because there weren't the laws there to help them. Mm. And we need stronger laws. We need the help to be able to action. But then I also had police who, you know, wanted to put me in handcuffs and put me in an interrogation room to ask me about this rubbish interview where I had apparently breached this vexatious AVO. So we just have to be really careful. You know, the one policeman told me that it can't be family violence because we're not in a relationship anymore.
Really?
Yeah. So we just need better education.
And podcasts like this or discussions, it doesn't matter whether it's a podcast, whatever it is, but more discussions about believing people. Like absolutely. The fact that you have gone to the police believing that you are going to be killed, you or your children.
Yeah.
Those sort of – you cannot – ignore those. You can't tell someone to come back if it gets more serious. What, you have to be killed before they do something? Like, that's, it's just not good enough. I'm sorry, Vic Pol, I love you dearly, but it's not good enough.
Absolutely. You know, he's smashing on my door and then he's able to calm down enough when they get there. And so, but I was just dropping off gifts.
Yeah. I also wanted to talk to you about your experience in court about being cross-examined by your husband's lawyers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But I feel like prefacing that with saying, I wonder what we've stooped to, the low level that we have stooped to, when the only way that a lawyer, a solicitor, whoever it is, can has to intimidate, let's say, you or the person in the box, the witness box, to have we got that low that the only way they feel they can win their case is to intimidate, humiliate. And again, I'm sorry to all those lawyers out there, but and I know there's good ones like police, but the times that I hear about the experience of being a victim and being questioned or cross-examined, surely we don't have to stoop to that sort of behaviour.
It's disgusting. My ex had two different lawyers, and both of their behaviour was just unacceptable. You would think that the judge would step in if the lawyer's not stepping in, and it's just not okay. You know, I'm the victim of a crime, and the way that the lawyers talk to you is just disgusting. The length of time that I was kept on the stand, being spoken to like I was the perpetrator, was just horrific. You know, for someone who's struggling, even if I wasn't struggling, but I was struggling with post-traumatic stress, it was just so traumatizing. And then to be yelled at that I'm a liar, it was just horrific. And the whole idea is that they're trying to provoke you. And, of course, after you've been yelled at a number of times, they do provoke you. It's just, you know, you get your days wrong, you start to cry, and the perpetrator snarks and sniggers, makes little comments under their breath. They give you looks. They stare at you the whole time giving you looks. And you're so sick by the end of the day. It's just horrific. And I have to say, my lawyer, sometimes I didn't have a lawyer because I couldn't afford to, but when I did have a lawyer, he was just a gentleman. And I just don't understand why both parties can't act as, you know, as people who are caring and empathetic people and still do their job. It was really disgusting.
They should just be intermediaries where they get your story, they get your husband's story.
Exactly.
And then a decision is made. But the fact that you can be on a witness stand and actually be called a liar.
It's disgusting.
And I imagine you would be made to feel like you're a drama queen.
That's exactly what they do. And, of course, you know, a narcissist is charming. They're able to put on a big display of knowing all the dates and being a perfect witness. And you are crumbling, and this is overwhelming. And so you are crying as you're telling your story. So you're not the perfect witness.
Yeah. They've got lawyers don't have a good reputation a lot. But again, as I say, I love VicPol, but I also recognise that they're not perfect. There are some great lawyers, and I've got to say the majority of lawyers that I have dealt with in my career have been amazing people. But there's some that, pardon me, are just pricks, and they are just – they want to make you feel intimidated and humiliated, and they do a good job, but that's not why they're there. They're there just to – it's about procedural fairness. Just be fair to somebody.
Absolutely. You know. That's exactly how – that's what I thought that they would do, and obviously I was completely naive. The idea is that they're trying to discredit you and they're trying to get you to be provoked. And it was just awful.
And, you know, to me, like, you've spent 27 years, I think you said, in total with your husband, and you have experienced 27 years plus when you were engaged being controlled and humiliated by this man, and then you get to court and then the people you expect to be fair, they actually start humiliating and defaming you and calling you a liar. Like, oh, Tammy.
That's what really shocks you, you know, that the whole system is abusive too.
Gee, isn't that a terrible thing to say, that the whole system is abusive? But you know what, Tammy? You're right.
Yeah.
You know, in too many instances to continue to ignore it. So your former husband, he eventually did end his life.
Yeah.
But as I did say in my introduction, he left a lot of heartache, didn't he, and a lot of what ifs.
He did.
As much as you feel comfortable, can you tell us about his death and how it affected you and the kids? I mean, it's almost a ridiculous question, I know, but because there was so much grief and trauma, I imagine in some ways there isn't that grief and trauma now, but in other ways he was still a part, such a significant part of your life, and he's your kid's father. Oh, yeah. The emotions must be all over the place.
It's been huge, I have to say. Look, it's not even a year and there's huge emotion that goes with it. I kind of just wanted to get my kids to 18 to know that they were safe. And then we got this call and I was just devastated. I didn't expect that I would be quite so devastated. But it's all that potential, you know. He was so much a part of me and I did adore him. I didn't adore him anymore. But I did adore him for so long and I was just completely devastated. And there's, you know, there's the grief for what you had and there's the grief for what you didn't have and you didn't get to have, you know, all those dreams that you had that never ever turned out the way they were supposed to. And so it kind of brings back all the grief and, you know, they call it complicated grief and there's just so much sadness. It's really hard to understand. So I think it just gave us a chance to really be able to deal with all the grief that we had been dealing with and not dealing with. And I think it'll take a bit of time. I thought there would be relief. It hasn't come yet. I think, of course, it will come at some stage, the idea that we don't have to deal with any of the fear anymore. But it hasn't quite come yet. And so there's just this heaviness, like all that potential is gone, the fact that maybe there was hope that one day things would be okay. Mm.
Tammy, were you surprised that he actually did end up ending his life, because he had threatened it many times, but you've said prior in this interview that you never thought that he would, but he did?
I think there was a part of me that thought that it would maybe happen someday. Originally, I never ever thought that he would hurt himself. I never in a million years thought he would hurt himself, but there was so much pain and he just never would deal with it. And so I suppose in some ways I thought maybe there was a possibility if things hit a downward spiral again, if things went bad, you know, it was only then that maybe something would happen, but I couldn't believe it. Yeah, I was in total shock.
Because I imagine that you probably thought, like a lot of people, that when somebody gets to rock bottom, there's only two ways to go. And most people choose, you know what, I've mucked up my life, my wife and kids, I've got to do something. Yeah. You know, like it's almost like a a realization, you know what, this is life, I've got to do something about it.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, he didn't choose that path, and really, what a loss. What a loss.
You know, I asked the doctors when he was in hospital, I said, has he done something to his brain? Like, why is he making these stupid decisions? Like, he seems to be making the same incorrect decision over and over again. So I thought maybe he had done some damage and from the medication he was taking. And they said, no, these are conscious decisions he's making. And he's responsible for the decisions that he made. And so at the end of the day, I had to take that responsibility I was holding for him and hand it over to him. At the end of the day, everybody's responsible for the decisions that they make in their lives, and everybody can only choose what life they want to lead. And as sad as I am to say that, because I would have liked him to live a different life, that was the decision that he made. And it makes me so sad, but that's what it was.
Yeah, and gee, Tammy, I didn't realise that it was only, you know, within the year. So you've come a long way, Tammy. Like, that's a huge amount of grief and sadness to deal with, and the fact that you can talk about it, I take my hat off to you. It just shows the strength you have to be able to share that, and hopefully somebody out there can take, you know, some of the messages that we're sending.
Thank you. I hope so. I just want to do some good, and I want some good to come out of it.
Yeah. Now, you've written a book.
Yeah. Well, I had written a book over the period of time, so it was part of my healing was to journal, and so the journaling became part of a process, and that turned into a book. Kind of a teacher at heart, and so there was so much I didn't know, and I wanted other people to be able to learn from what I didn't know. You know, we can only do better when we know better, and so I really want to help survivors, help them to know that there's hope. I really want to build an army of allies, because only when people witness and sit with us in our pain is that when that's part of our healing. And then also I want to prevent it from happening to anyone else. And so, you know, what are the lessons that we can take in terms of, you know, having healthy relationships, building relationships of trust, but also of transparency? How can we prevent these things from happening? And so, yeah, the book's nearly ready to come out.
So your book is called The Grimmest of Fairy Tales.
Yeah.
And it's your way. I think that's a really important point, that it's your way of coping with what you were going through. You journaled it.
And that's right.
I think that's really important for people out there, that, you know, there's different ways that we cope with trauma and sadness and et cetera, but I think it's really therapeutic to write, well, for a lot of people, doesn't suit everyone, but therapeutic to write down how you are feeling. And it is a great reference, isn't it? Because you could look back and think, my goodness, on that day, this is how bad I was, how sad I was. But look at my life now. You know, I'm not saying you in particular, but how you can grow from something so terrible. So, and this is, your book is basically your journal, is it? Or your journal is the basis of your book?
Yeah, no, I took some of those entries and I turned them into a book. So it's not my journal. It's turned into a book. I've got a friend who's a psychologist, and she helped me she really encouraged me to actually write the book. And then she's helped me add, you know, some professional experience into the book as well. So it's not just a memoir, but a self-help book. And it tries to help us to gather some lessons. And we really just hope to make a real difference. And yeah, I think we've also spoken about some of the ways that I did heal. And like you say, everybody heals in different ways. I'm a mindfulness and meditation teacher, and so I use some of those skills. I do believe in therapy, but again, everybody heals in different ways. So it's about finding the way that works for you, but also knowing that there is hope, that people do come through it, that we struggle, but that we can heal. And I think it's really important to know that there is a light at the end of all of this, and we can get through.
And, you know, I imagine writing the book, it would be pretty much, I suppose, a warts and all of your relationship with your husband. And I don't imagine it would have been easy to write, because you did love him so much at different times in your life. And those emotions don't magically disappear, do they?
No, it of course it's not an easy thing to do, but it was. I really want to be able to help people, and I really want something good to come out of this. And if this is a way that we could prevent just one person from going through the pain, then it'll be worth it.
Well, I think it will be, because I think your hope will come to fruition. I think there will be people out there that will gain hope, and also from the kids, you know, that they have gone on to be very successful. So, you know, we learn some things from being so sad and, yeah, so grief-stricken. Look, in closing, Tammy, thank you for sharing such obviously a very difficult time in your life. But as you said, you're doing it to help others, to give others strength and hope that although, you know, some people might be in your situation and feel hopeless and helpless, that it is possible, isn't it, to find, I don't know if we could say that you've found happiness again. You will, but maybe at this point only a year down the track. But, you know, it is possible to keep going, and probably more importantly to feel safe, like to feel safe again. That's really important. And
absolutely.
Like you said, and we're not saying it's easy. Yes, your life's different now, but the stress and anxiety isn't constant. And I just can't imagine the knowledge of being safe. It just cannot be underestimated, and you feel safe.
That's the most important thing, absolutely. So I've been out of the relationship for 8 years, but a lot of that time was really just being in and out of courts. But yeah, you know, even in that time, there've definitely been moments of happiness and joy. And yeah, I'm just very grateful for the people around me and being able to move forward.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, Tammy. And again, thank you for being so open and sharing, you know, some very, very painful experiences in your life. But I know you'll help people out there. So thanks.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate your time and how kind you are.
Thank you, Tammy.
Thanks.
As you've probably noticed, we've moved to a new platform called Acast. I think that's the right expression, I've got no idea. And my previous reviews haven't transferred over. I need reviews. Could you do me a favour and put up a review? And thank you so much for your support and patronage. With your help, I can give you that little bit extra. Thanks.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.